Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation. Recorded live during the Spring 2020 Wednesday webinar series.
So let me tell you a little story. When I was a wee lad, around the age of 12, my best friend and I came up with the best idea. And that was to take my family truck, we call it a Chevy Love, and we're going to take it out for a spin. That's the little truck right there. At first, I resisted the idea of taking the truck. You know, it was a bad idea because my parents weren't home, and to steal a truck didn't seem like the best idea, but my friend and I would finally convince ourselves that this was the best idea ever. Like I said, my siblings were gone, so we ran out and jumped in the truck. And you know what? We decided, you know what? Since we're already stealing a truck, what we're going to do is we're going to go take it off-roading or rock crawling. I was down Moab, Utah. This, again, best idea ever, right? And so we went to this area. We drove this area that has these big, huge steps. It's a place called Johnson's. And what I do is I pull my truck up. We decided to start on the top, and you go to the edge of the first step, you drop the front tires off, you inch forward and drop the back tires and front tires. It's just like big steps. So, you know, it's going perfect. It was like the best idea, right? Best idea. And pretty soon the steps got shorter and taller. So I dropped the front tires off and bam, the truck landed on the frame of one of the rocks. I was like, oh my gosh, okay. We were dead high center. You know, I put in first gear, reverse. It wasn't working. I wasn't going anywhere. So you know what? I have a good idea. So I decided, since I was a driver and I was the one that had been off-roading before, I'm going to go check this out. How stuck am I really? So I get out of the truck. I put the truck in neutral. So standard transmission, put it in neutral, get out, walk around the truck. And oh my goodness, yep, sure, we're stuck. So I'm like, I wonder how hard it's going to be for my friend who's in the truck with me to get it unstuck. So I go to the back of the truck and I put my hands up on the truck and I kind of rock it. Oh yeah. Oh, this is gonna be pretty easy. Yep. It's a small truck. It's gonna be real easy. Rock it. And right when it came down, I look at my friend and he's in the passenger seat still, strapped in with the seat belt, and he's looking over his shoulder and he's looking at me like, what the heck is going on? And I gave him the look of, it's going to be all right. And right when I rocked the truck back up, whoosh, the truck left. It fell. It rolled down the hill. Now, no driver, vehicle in neutral, and no brake. The truck just rolled. Boom, boom. So I literally watched what I thought at the moment. I literally watched my best friend die in front of me. Now, luckily, it didn't happen. The truck went straight ahead and ran into a big old tree right at the bottom of the hill. So I go running down the hill as fast as possible, and I get there, and I get check it out. Not my friend, of course, the truck, because I have to answer to my parents in just a little bit. So I walk around the truck, and just a couple little scratches and dings, it's all right. And then I check my friend, and he's luckily okay. He was all right, a little scared, but luckily he had a seatbelt on, he was good. So I jump in the truck, put in reverse, back off the tree, and along we went down the hill and finished the hill. So since that time, this really sparked the idea of why. Why did that happen? And there's been many other instances in my life and things I've seen that it's just like, why? Why did that happen? My first gut reaction and my first reaction was, don't steal a truck. Don't go rock crawling, right? It's not the question of, it wasn't the question of stealing the truck necessarily. It wasn't why to leave the vehicle neutral. It's not why to leave my friend in there. Why to let him walk around it. But why did I give in to taking the truck in the first place? And that incident and the several others has led me to here, being with you, asking the question, why did that happen? And it's led me to answering the question or finding the key of how you can become your own hero. And we'll discuss that in just a minute. But first, my name is Justin Zufelt. I'm extremely grateful to be here with you today. This is a safe place. I'm going to talk about some pretty heavy things. We're gonna talk about addictions, but I'm mainly gonna focus on pornography. That's gonna be the one that I mainly focus on just in the conversation. But whenever I say pornography, anything like that, you can insert any addiction. It can be TV or gaming or drugs or Twinkies or whatever it is. You insert that word when I say pornography, and this thing we're gonna talk about, addiction and so forth, that's what we're gonna talk about. How do we overcome these feelings? How do we say no? How do we stop the cycle in our life? And addiction is part of it, but there's, of course, it's very deep and very broad. We're going to talk about that. Now, when I talk, I'm going to use religious terms. I use my scientific evidence that I've discovered and put together, and I'm going to describe it to you in story form, and some of it is religious. So just so you know, we are going to discuss some religion, and we're going to have some good times, tell some stories, have some laughs at my expense, mainly just like that last story, and have some fun. But this is my little family. See them all. Just to let you know, my wife's pregnant, and that we just had our sixth child. 3 weeks ago. Yeah, no, four weeks ago. My goodness, he's 4 weeks today. Oh, so much fun. Okay, so let me ask you a question. How many of you have had a serious craving for a snack? I usually get them after dinner. I'm like, you know, my favorite one is ice cream. I love ice cream. I love it. And so how many of you have had a serious craving for a snack? One that just won't let go of you. Let me tell you about what happened to me just the other night. I walked out to my garage, and after dinner, and I was wanting my little Christmas tree. Or not, oh my goodness, my ice cream treat. I walk out to the garage. I thought Christmas garage. So I opened my refrigerator, or sorry, freezer. I opened the freezer, and all of my ice cream was gone. Every one of them. And my favorite out of all ice cream is ice cream sandwiches. And those, the brand new boxes I had just purchased, were gone. Every one of them. I was just like, oh my gosh, where's my ice cream? I the rest of the night, I just kept like thinking about, this is me right here. I was really mad. I was like mad, but I was very sad. I wanted my ice cream, right? But the rest of the night, I was like, hey honey, you know what? I think we need some soap. I should run to the store and get some soap. She's like, oh, We're good. We got enough soap. Like, okay. Well, toilet paper right now, right? I'm like, how about some toilet paper? I heard Costco has toilet paper. I said, no, we got plenty of toilet paper. We have so much. I'm like, dang it. Diapers. Who needs diapers? The baby does. 4 weeks old, right? Oh no, we got so many diapers. We're lasting here. Oh, dang it. I just was so sad. Like, where's the diapers? Where's the wipes? Idea of ice cream out of my mind. Who's had that before? Who's had that? Who has had that thought of ice cream or any other like little craving you've had? How has that, those cravings, influenced your actions? For me, I kept asking my wife about going to the store. You know, I was going to get in the car and drive and use gas and just go get ice cream. What have those the cravings influenced your life? How has that influenced your life? What we're going to talk about is what happens when those cravings are for something that's not good, that we know is not good for us. What if it's, instead of an ice cream sandwich, what if it's too much time on technology? What if it's pornography? What if it's, TV or too much food? What we're going to talk about is finding a way out of that. How to release yourself, release your mind, and if you're a parent, how to help your children, if you're a child, how to even help your parents and yourself, how to help each other through this dream. What we're about to discuss, I believe, is the key to releasing yourself and finding your own story. So before we get into that even, I'm gonna talk about three assumptions I've made about you. The very first three assumptions you're listening, what are my assumptions about you? My first one is you already know about pornography. You already know it's bad. You have a basic understanding that it can cause anxiety and depression. You've heard that it can cause damage to your brain. It can cause damage to your sex organs and also your relationships, which is all true. And again, you can enter any of your, if you have an addiction, your child, or you, if you're a child that you know or your parents are going through, enter that word in. If, you know, drugs, alcohol, any of those things, too much time on technology. We know that spending too much time on those things is bad, and also consuming bad things like pornography and drugs and alcohol, we know it's harmful, right? We know that. The second assumption, you are a natural born human being. You didn't come here from space and just drop out of the sky out of a spaceship. You are a natural born human being. You have their regular appetites and feelings and fears. You have hopes, temptations, and desires. You are just like me, and I am just like you. The third. Well, since you're a natural born human being, you make mistakes. Sometimes you pull under your brother and sister's hair and you make them cry. Sometimes you spank your children when you out of anger rather than out of learning or teaching. Sometimes you steal a vehicle or a truck and drop it down a hill. Sometimes you take chewed gum and you put it on the bottom of a desk. Oh, gross, right? We make mistakes. We're humans. So this is my final assumption. Especially with pornography, you've already been exposed. You've already been exposed to pornography. If it's drugs, alcohol, or smoking, or e-cigarettes, or all of those other things, you've already been exposed to it, whether it's through media, or whether through friends, or school, or church, or home. You've already been exposed to it. That's my three assumptions about you, okay? Now, what does this have to do with becoming a hero? How does this, like, become a hero of your own story? What does this have to do? Now, the thing is, all heroes have their villains. Every one of them. Think about it. Spider-Man, Superman, Captain Marvel, Iron Man, Black Widow, all of them. Every single one of those heroes make mistakes. Like, come on, like Iron Man, like, wow, a lot of mistakes, right? The whole movies are created about all those mistakes that he makes. You are the hero. You are the hero. Because you make mistakes, and you're the hero of your own story. I want you to remember this as we go through the rest of this this discussion. Heroes, it's not the mistakes that defines a hero. Instead, it's what they overcome. It's how they win. It's the winning. It's at the end when you have that big smile on your face and you feel good and watching like a Marvel show or any other hero show. That feeling at the end, that you look at those superheroes like, oh my gosh, they overcame so much. And that's you. People are watching you. You're watching, and when you look back at your life, you can have the exact same feeling. Oh my gosh, I've overcame so much. That's what's going to happen, okay? There's a little tidbit of it. Now, who am I? Who might even be talking to you about this? I want you to think of me as your Mr. Q, your Alfred, even, heck, your Yoda, and Mrs. Potts. Now, quick story. I have to tell you this. My wife helped me put the slide deck together. I was like, hey, honey, I need some photos. Here's a list. I wrote out a list, and she grabbed one of them was Miss Potts. And so I get on the computer, she hands them over, I hop on the computer, and this is what's there, Miss Potts. I was like, oh, no, not that Miss Potts, this Miss Potts. She's like, who's Miss Potts? I'm like, oh my gosh, it's hilarious. She actually isn't watching them, so I'm very grateful she did this in the first place. She's awesome. So when you're discussing addictions or any of that nature, there's something very, very important. And parents and youth, I want you to listen very, very carefully to this portion, okay? Very carefully. This is very important. There's three types of victims: pornography, drug, alcohol, all of it, okay? There's three types of victims because these areas, these industries are targeting you, children. No matter who you are, you are being targeted by these industries, okay? So you're victims to their marketing and their structure. First, there's accidental. This is like the individuals. I was just in Pocatello. I was driving down the road and Pocatello, Idaho. I was driving down the road and there's a big billboard on the side of the road, and it was designed to cause arousal. So I go to their store and buy certain things. I did not plan on that. I wasn't going there. I wasn't looking for it. I was just driving down the road. And my kids, the same thing. They're in the back seat and they're looking. I'm watching them in the rearview mirror and they're looking. It's like, oh my gosh. I'm like, look over here, deer. There's something over there. Those are accidental victims, okay? And happens all the time, especially in our modern world where it's just we're being bombarded with messaging. So this is something that's very, very common. So accidental. My second type is compulsive. Now, this is an individual or youth that has, you know, a little more time, like the extra time. They're sad. They're lonely. These are individuals that will view pornography or these other things just to fill in the time. Or if they're not feeling too well, it gives them a little spike. So it makes them feel better just for that like little reprieve just for a moment. So that's our compulsive user. Okay. So that's, if you're talking about pornography, alcohol, drug, especially our youth, this is the main section our youth are sitting in. This is what most of them are. They just have extra time. Okay. So yeah, so you time, you have a computer, you have access, and the sadness. The third one is addiction. Now this one, I'm gonna be very, very, very clear, okay? Addiction itself is when we're spending too much time or doing something that is causing damage to our regular life. That is addiction. So if a youth or say me, when I get on a computer and I hop on, if I viewed pornography when I'm bored, but then I still go to work and I still do school and I live my life regularly and there's no bad influence, I'm just doing okay. That is compulsive use. Now on the other side, if I get on there and I get addiction, or I get on the computer and I don't go to work or I skip work, I don't do my homework, I don't go to school, I don't go socialize with my friends, that is addiction. That is the level that, just like this says, it's okay to get help at this point. You need professional help. So a parent, if this is happening to your child, if you catch them every once in a while, they're outside playing, but you get on their computer and you catch it, okay, compulsive use, we can help them. We can go through that. But if you catch them and their grades are terrible and they're not going to work and they're stuck in the room, they're not going with friends, or they're only going with friends and they're just doing this stuff, that is a negative effect on the life. And that is something that you have to get help for. You have to get professional assistance with that at that level. So when we go through this, as a person goes through the guilt and shame, or from compulsive to addiction, what happens is this is being driven by shame. Shame is driving them, people deeper and deeper into the shame feeling, and it's making them go more and more into using the pornography and all that stuff. Shame is when a person feels so bad that you go into the act of hiding mistakes emotionally and physically. So that youth is compulsive. Parents, please, for the love of heaven, do not use the word addiction. Do not say, my child is addicted, any of that stuff, unless you are positive, 100% confirmed with a counselor. Because as soon as you say that word addiction, as soon as you say, my child's addicted to, and that child hears that, guess what? Every time they see that, they're going to spiral down. They're going to spiral into this further and further shame because they know they're doing something so bad, and they're addicted to it. And it just drives the shame down inside of them. So shame, okay? That's when we're hiding something that's a mistake and it's emotional or physical, right? So I want you to imagine this. I want you to look inside your brain. If you have to close your mind for this, go ahead. Or not minds. Close your eyes for this. Close your eyes. And I want you to imagine that in the very, very back, if you look way back in the back of your brain, as far back as you go, and we get the very, very back of your brain, I want you to open that door that's there. It's kind of an old wooden door, has a little door handle that's like silver and old antique swirls on it. But turn that knob and open that door, and then inside there's a very dark room. Do you see that room? I want you to walk down the steps inside that room, and on the very back wall of that cellar in your brain, there's a shelf that's sitting there. Okay? There's a shelf back there. Now, what happens when you have shame is you're taking, I think, glass jars in a cellar, right? Glass jars, and you're taking our youth are taking the mistakes, they're stuffing them inside those jars, putting the lid on, and they put up on the shelf. And the more mistakes they make, they put them back in the jar to hide it because they're in the back of the cellar, and they put it up on the shelf. And they keep putting it up on the shelf. They keep putting it up there. Okay? I want you to imagine that. Now, as we make mistakes, this is higher and higher, and more mistakes, and more, it's not the mistakes, it's the hiding. It's putting them on the shelf, and it gets higher and higher, heavier and heavier. at first, this seems like a really good idea because, you know what? I don't have to deal with all the mistakes. I don't have to deal with what I looked at pornography yesterday, or I accidentally saw this, or I had some extra time. I got on my phone. And I saw some things. I spent too much time on there. It feels, it just kind of takes care of that. But over time, guess what happens? Over time, the load gets so heavy that it comes crashing down. It comes falling down all over the place, and it's a big mess. It's so, so difficult at that point to take care of. When we look at pornography, when we look at, or we drink alcohol or smoke or e-cigarette or too much time and technology, or take our phones in our room at night by yourself and see things we're not supposed to see, all that, when it comes crashing down, it comes discovered because it just pours out. It's a huge mess. Now it can be dealt with, but it's so difficult. It's so much easier just to get rid of it, just to be done with it. That, my friends, is what happened to me when I was very young. I got addicted at a very, very young age. I became addicted at about 13 years old. I became exposed to accidental and compulsive user at 8 years old. So I went through this whole spectrum, and I went through the addiction, and I crashed at 13, and I crashed at 20, and I crashed at 25, because what I did is I kept going back to that shelf. I keep putting stuff. I put some nails in there trying to keep up the shelf, and just came crashing down again. What I want to teach you is what I finally learned. What I finally learned is to keep it off the shelf. I want you to turn, if you have someone watching with you, I want you to turn to them and say, keep it off the shelf, my friend. Keep it off. Like, don't let it be there. Just tell me. And if it's you, I want you to tell yourself. I want you to promise yourself, I will keep it off the shelf. Now, this is something I just put together. If you look on the left, my left-hand side, it says light. On the very bottom, it says action. Do you see that? And you have low and high light. You have on the bottom, low and high action. Now, when you have that, what you see is you have four quadrants, right? On the bottom left, if there's low light and low action, what you have is someone that's lost. They're not really looking at stuff because they're not taking action on it, but they're not, when I say low light, it's doing it like exposing and telling people and talking to parents or telling teachers, like being exposing it, the light, putting more light on it. So they're not talking about what they're doing wrong, but they're also not doing much. They're lost. They're not sure which way they're going to go. And this is a point for a parent to really has to talk to their youth, ask them questions, ask them what's going on, and keep on them to, they need to take a direction so you can react to it and help them through that. Now, if you're on the very top, if they're taking like tons of light, they're talking about all the problems. This is the kid that like, he tells everything's going wrong. They're talking about scriptures. They're talking about everything, that all this stuff. They're quoting scriptures. They're telling about people down the road that did things wrong. However, on the bottom, they're not taking action. You know, they're low action. They're not helping those people. They're not going out and helping others. They're not taking action to stop it from happening. They're just talking about it. That's the cheerleader. Okay. Cheers people on and says stuff, but they don't take action to help, right? They're not on the basketball court dribbling the ball and taking shots. They're on the sideline yelling, okay? Now, on the bottom right, high action and low light, that is your addict. That's hiding everything, but they're taking tons of action. You know, they're hiding things on the computer. They're hiding their tracks. They're seeking it. They're searching for it. They're looking for new avenues, new venues, new areas. That's high action, but low light, that's a person that's addicted. And that's where you as a parent or you as a youth need to get tons of, like, you need help at this point, okay? So if there's tons of light, so you're talking about it, and there's tons of action, that's our teacher. And this is as a parent, this is where you need to be. Now, if you're not at this point, you need to move from the cheerleader section, and you need to move over to the teacher section. No more just talking and cheering from the sidelines. You need to get on the court with your kid and actually start teaching and taking action. You know, like talking, teaching, going through, getting to know all of your kids' friends, and just doing everything you can. Take every action step you can possibly take on that teacher side, okay? Now, this next concept is very personal to me. This is it. This is the meat, okay? Ramadi, Iraq, December 24th, 2005. This is the military or the spiritual tactic that is being that's leading towards addiction. This is what's being used against us right now. Okay, I'm going to talk about this. In Ramadi, 2024, so Christmas Eve in 2005, my team and I, we were in Iraq, and we were searching for IEDs and bombs. We're looking for bad people and bad things that hurt myself, my team, or our coalition. And so we were driving all over the desert in Iraq. And one area, we would patrol these roads. You see this? Like, we'd patrol all these roads back and forth. And a lot of times, we were just waiting to get blown up. That's what we're waiting for. A bomb to go off or to find someone that's trying to hurt us. As we're driving down these, we had a lot of close calls. We had a lot of close calls, like tons of them. And so over time, the first we got there and there's things blowing up and being shot at, we was like really scary. I was on edge and we were like, you know, in the thick of it. But as time went on, we started to get just complacent. I started to get complacent, especially. We're like, well, yeah, another bomb. Okay. Oh, there's another person over there. Oh, we're okay. And so as time went on, we became more and more complacent. We just stopped really caring, to tell you the truth. Now on the 24th of, Christmas Eve, right? Christmas Eve of 2005, my friends and I, we decided to go on a little patrol on this lower route. And when we got to this section, there was a dirt road that linked the two highways. You saw the two highways, they're really far apart in some sections. There was a dirt road that we decided to go across. Now, we use this dirt road almost every day. We used it continually, right? So we came on this road, and I was driving. So I turned to the right, and I started driving down, and I dropped the front tires off, and I inched forward, and I dropped my back tires off. Boom. Just like that. And all of a sudden, it was completely dark. Now, this is not a video of what I went through. It's just a similar thing. It was completely dark. It was just black and dark, and the smell, when I finally, my mind came back around, I could smell like black powder, I could smell burned things, I could smell chemicals and fire. It was crazy. Like, I'm gonna tell you, when I go shooting with my family, when we go shooting guns, it's like, oh my gosh, it just brings back the memories so much. We went into what's called a kill zone. Now, a kill zone is any situation that forces you to be channeled through a small area and causes a group of warriors to slow down and bunch together. That is called the fatal funnel, a vortex of death, or more commonly, the kill zone. So when we took that route, it was something that channeled, right? It was a small road. We took it continually. So the bad guys looked at it, they say, okay, they're going to a small area, they're always there, and they're going to slow down because they're going to take the corner and drop off and go slow. So we were easy targets. That is a kill zone. Now, let me go back. It's an area that good guys and bad guys know about. It's an area that makes it a lot easier to defend from one side and harm the other with greater casualties. And if you think of like a doorway, if you think of a doorway to a house, when you walk through it, if you're a bad guy inside of a house, it's a lot easier to shoot people who are coming through the door than a big field. So that is a kill zone. The kill zone is real and can be found on every battlefield and war ever fought. It happened with the Spartans. It happened in Persia. Happened with the knights. It happened with the knights of shining armor and arrows being shot. Happened in World War II, where everything changed, that we went to trench warfare, we went to building to building, but it was still a kill zone. We were still using kill zones. It's been used all the time. It's still used today. Within technology, we are still using kill zones. We are channeling information into small areas and making it easier to attack. We can drop a concrete bomb from 30,000 feet in the air and aim for a person's head or their feet. And now, in today's world, we have killer drones. I know it's not exactly a killer drone, right? Well, with a water gun. But the countries in the world are creating killer drones that will go around, and they already have in Europe, and we have them too, but they will identify you, and they will decide based on your social media account, they'll be based on a profile that's been built or a name on a list, and they'll decide whether to kill you or not. That's where we are. It's lethality to the max. We have been built into the kill zone all the way through all wars, all battles. Now, this is especially true in the spiritual battle as well. The kill zone is not only a physical battle. Instead, instead of a doorway or a field, it happens in the battlefield of thought. Vehicle brain, right? If you're in the kill zone, then you're allowing your mind to remain focused on whatever temptation is being placed there. That's where that's what we're going to discuss. Okay. That is the kill zone that we are fighting. It's something I discovered when I was a young child. Why did I give in to stealing that truck? Why did I give in to the temptation of pornography when I turned 8 years old? And after that, why did I keep giving into it? And it's because the kill zone, when you allow your mind to focus, you cut off the sides and you go focus on just that, whatever is in front of you, whatever you're being tempted with, over time, no matter who you are, if you keep focusing on that temptation, it's going to eventually win. As I said in my story, the very, very beginning, when I was a kid, and we thought, oh man, stealing a truck, we kept thinking about it. We kept rationalizing it. And eventually we came up with that this was the greatest idea in the world, is to steal a truck and then to go rock crawling, right? So that's the kill zone, the spiritual kill zone. So we have the physical kill zone, which as a soldier, I'm telling you right now, is very, very real. As a soldier in the spiritual side, I'm telling you, it's very, very real. Temptations are being placed in our brain. They're being put right in front of us. The spiritual kill zone follows the same structure as a physical kill zone, namely forcing the enemy, you and I, into a centralized location where it's easier to hit us. Okay? So how is that happening? When I was a kid, when I was introduced to pornography, what happened is I went over for a sleepover. I went to my friend's house. He's like one of the only ones with a computer with internet connection. It was one of the first ones in my school is what he had. And late at night, it started showing me stuff. And we were at midnight in the dark at a computer screen. And that was a kill zone, because eventually that's going to happen if you're by yourself or, someone's trying to show you that stuff, right? Well, today, guess what? It's right in front of us. And now cell phones are not the only place. Let me be very, very clear. Cell phones are an easy place and they're easy target and they're always there. I have my cell phone right in front of me, even though I'm in this presentation. I guarantee you most of you have your cell phones with you. Our presenter, Allison, probably has her cell phone with her, right? And she's probably texting me away, like, what the heck's going on? We have them everywhere. We have them all the time. Okay, so that's a big example of a kill zone currently. But look, there's more. Phones in the bedroom, single dating, sleepovers, social media, gaming, DMing. The kill zones are all over the place. They're being laid all over the place in the world. We just have to be mindful of where they are, how they look, and then we can overcome them. Okay? So listen, during my study of history, I was introduced to some incredible leaders who fell after the rise to power. I was amazed at how many people fell. I mean, look at this, General Petraeus and David and Goliath and Clinton and all and Nixon. It happens all the time. The greatest warriors, the greatest, strongest people all of a sudden came falling down because they allowed themselves to stay within the kill zone. I want you to tell you, this is one of the greatest examples of a kill zone, right? From history. I can tell you about Clinton and Nixon and all these other individuals, but David and Goliath is the number one example. It's so clear. It's so laid out. The scriptures lays it out in front of us. It's exactly what happened, okay? But King David was a king of Israel. And he truly had everything. He had kingdoms. He had more wives than we can count. He had money. He had privilege and everything he wanted. I mean, the most powerful person on earth at the time, pretty much. Okay, he had all these things. But one night, while hanging out on his roof, he observed his neighbor across the way, Bathsheba. I say Bathsheba to help me remember Bathsheba, and she was taking a bath at her home. With what we have learned so far, we can identify this as a physical and spiritual kill zone moment in King David's life. At that moment, he had a choice to make. He was up on the roof, he looks across the way, and he sees a woman bathing, right? I'm sure she was in a birthday suit, right? So he's looking across the way. This is a kill zone. This is the moment he has to make a decision. He can go towards order and chaos, towards order or towards chaos. Now, we know what he should have done. He should have ran away, right? He should have got off that roof and ran as fast as he possibly could. And remembering never to return to that rooftop at that time again, because that's what happened. That's what you heard his neighbor was doing. Or he could stay and watch. Instead of staying safe, David chose to stay and watch. His choice resulted in his stealing a man's wife, having a baby out of wedlock, and murdering an innocent man. This is King David, the guy that killed Goliath as a youth. I want you to be, like, listen to this. No matter how strong you think you are, no matter who you think you are, if you remain inside a kill zone, if you remain inside that area of temptation, even the strongest warriors and kings and ancient prophets and current leaders fell because they remained inside the kill zone. You have to get out of the kill zone, right? If you were in battle, you don't want to be in the place where everyone's getting killed. That hurts and you die. You don't want to be there. You want to get out of it. It's the same thing spiritually. Even though it's a temptation, when that happens, you have to remember to get out of the kill zone. Know this. The pornography industry, the tobacco industry, the alcohol industry, the food industry, the media industry, the social media industry, all the industries, they're trying to create kill zones for you, just like the insurgents created kill zones for me and my team. The marketing world has hired doctors and marketers and psychiatrists and therapists to increase the addictive nature of all of these vices we're talking about. Every one of them. They're trying to make them irresistible, literally. As a warrior and a hero, you need to know how to stay out of the kill zone and defeat the pornography industry, and again, name all those other industries that are out there. I want you to look at the person. If you're with somebody, look at the person in front of you or next to you and tell them, I will be victorious. I will be victorious. You are going to win this. You're going to win. How do I know? I'm going to tell you a short little story, okay? How do I know you're going to be victorious? A few years ago, I was visiting my family during a business trip, my extended family, let me clarify that, my extended trip up here in northern Utah. And each evening after work, I spent my time trying to discover what I should do with my newfound information of the kill zone. I was scared to talk about it. I had all this information. I knew that the kill zone is real. I know the kill zone is real, but I knew that at the time, it was just discovered. I spent so much time learning and reading about it. And it's like, oh my gosh, it's out there. This kill zone is hurting our youth. It's hurting our parents. It's hurting our leaders. It's real. But I didn't want people to know that I suffered from a kill zones. I didn't want them to know that I had fallen to pornography at a very young age. My parents still didn't know. My friends didn't know. My wife was the only person that really knew. My kids didn't know about it. I didn't want to let people know that I had failed so much and that I had that problem. I was afraid of what others would say. I was afraid of what they would think about me. On the last day of my trip, I woke up early in the morning and packed my bags to get ready to hop on the airplane. That morning, when I knelt down and prayed, I meditated and prayed on my fears and what I needed to do. While I was meditating, I had a dream. The dream started at the top of a concrete stairwell. I followed the stairs down into like a basement area, which led to several flights of stairs down into this very dark basement. The room was very dark and only lit by one single red light. Even though the room was extremely dark, I looked around and I saw the room was filled with men and women as far as the eye could see. They were all sitting in these metal chairs. I don't know why metal chairs, but they're sitting in metal chairs and sitting in one direction. The people all were sitting like a theater, all just in rows and rows and rows as far as they could see. All of them sat with their elbows down on their knees and their faces in their hands. And they would just like make these little sideways glances to the left and right. It was really just it looked like they were ashamed, like they were hiding themselves. They were embarrassed to be there. They didn't want anyone to see their face. Like I said, all of the chairs were pointing in one direction. And as I looked around the room, the direction they were pointed, in front of them was this huge brick wall that had red curtains on either side of it. I watched the scene for several minutes, and it just took in the gloom. It was just so sad. It was there was fear and there was anxiety and there was shame. It was overwhelmingly sad. But after a few minutes, what I saw is I saw one person and then two and then five and then 10 stand up and they walked to the front of the room. And when he got to the front of the room, I saw them and they put their hands up on the wall, on the brick wall. And they started to push on the wall. And then more people came and more people came and the more people that came, I started to see the wall. It started to kind of like bow. You kind of see like little cracks kind of start to develop. And more people, I'm not saying they were like pushing. I mean, they were pushing. They were putting everything they could into that wall to push it down. They're putting the elbows into it. They were doing everything they could. And moments later, boom, the wall came crashing down. It came crashing down. And instantly, the room was flooded with light. And I awoke from my dream. That's why I'm here. I am here looking for the warriors who will take a stand against this life-snuffing industry. I am looking for the heroes who will stand shoulder to shoulder against pornography and all the other addictions and its blinding temptations. I'm here to train warriors how to push back against these industries. I'm here to teach you how to push back against pornography. Because I know, this is my dream, this is what taught me, when enough of those heroes, enough of you, have been taught how to stay free from pornography and addictions and respond to the call, then we can defeat the Goliath pornography industry and their sword of temptation. Remember, it was that same sword that Goliath pointed at King David and threatened his life with that King David used to cut off his head. You are the warriors I am looking for. I can see you. I can see that you have the same strength as those that stood at the wall. And I know it's hard to say, if you're here, if you're listening, then I can see your strength. As I sit in conferences and talk to people and have small meetings now, I know you have the strength to do this. I know you want to push back. And parents, I'm talking to you too. I'm not just talking to youth. You are the warriors that are going to help them and walk up to that wall with them and push it down. I know it. Let me be frank. The process to fortify your mind, soul, and body from temptations, it takes time. Just like learning a new skill or working out, your mind and body have to be trained. However, I want to share some quick tips with you, okay? These are really quick tips of how to overcome instantly for a short amount of time. And then you can keep working on taking care of the temptation with your parents and spiritual leaders and friends. The next time you have that temptation, next time whatever your temptation is, pornography, whatever it is, or whatever you're addicted to, or not addicted to, oh my goodness, I just said the word, I'm in trouble, whatever your temptation is. What I want you to do, as I want you to say, it's not over till the fat lady sings. I know it's an old saying, but I want you to say that because I want you to remember that. And I want you to start singing. I want you to belt it out in your brain or outside, out loud. I want you to sing whatever comes to your brain. Now, me personally, this is something I've used for several years. I still use it. I still use it almost daily. In fact, I'll say I use it daily. I teach all my kids to use this as well. Sing and sing and sing to your heart's content. Now, I use very simple songs from my youth. I have about 4 songs. And there's a couple others. I know a few words too, but the 4 songs are my go-to. I go to them and I just sing. I pick those songs because they're a very simple tune. They have sentimental value to me, so they mean a lot to me, and I sing those. And let me just be very clear, they are children's songs. I use children's songs because I love the tunes, and again, they're simple. When you sing those songs, just keep repeating it until the temptation goes away. Now listen, just like the attic, you know, in the back of your brain, just like we're talking about the light and everything, light and darkness cannot occupy the same place. They can't. It's impossible. You try it. Take a flashlight and turn a flashlight on. Anywhere that you point that light, the darkness disappears. And this is exactly what this is. singing a song that is good, that is wholesome, that is fun, that is something that makes you happy, it cannot be in the same place. If it brings joy to your life, it cannot stay. Darkness cannot stay there. It has to leave. So you keep singing that song until the temptation goes away. Now, if you stop and you're like, okay, I'm good, and you start going about your business, and it comes back, guess what? Just keep singing, keep going. Me personally, I meditate or pray afterwards. You know, thank you very much. Thank you. Get rid of this feeling and move on with my day. And it's something that can instantly take care of it. Right when that temptation happens, you have to do it right then. No, don't think about it. Don't take time on it. Instantly, just start singing a childhood song. And if you want to memorize some songs for it, awesome. I would love to hear what songs you have chosen or memorized. Okay, that's tip number one. Tip number two. In the military, we are assigned friends that never leave our side. They're called battle buddies. We walk, we talk, we use the bathroom, the restroom. We even go shower in separate stalls. But when my battle buddy goes showers, I had to go shower too. If the call came to it, as a battle buddy, you fight next to them, you sit in the foxholes with them, and you die with them if you have to. It is a serious offense if you're in the military, especially in the beginning. It's a serious offense if you're caught without your battle buddy. It is that serious. It's something that is so important to the military that they will punish you for not having a battle buddy with you. This system has proven extremely effective in the military. And I'm telling you right now, me personally, extremely effective in my personal life. I have seen a direct link of success in my life between my battle buddies and myself. The stronger the battle buddy system that I have, the better my life is. The better, the more battle buddies and the better battle buddies I have, the easier life is. Because if I have struggles, I just call my battle buddy. And guess what? He's standing right next to me, shoulder to shoulder, or she, my wife is my best battle buddy, standing right next to me, shoulder to shoulder, and going through it together. It is time for you to create your own battle buddies. Ask your family, friends, and teachers, and leaders to become your battle buddies. And I know I want you to use these terms because I want you to remember that it's being what it is, and also them. I want you to walk up to your mom and dad and say, will you be my battle buddy? I want you to walk up to your teacher and say, will you be my battle buddy? This is something that's so powerful. And I do an entire presentation just on this subject. It's amazing how strong this and powerful this can be in your life to overcome the temptations and to get rid of the kill zones in your life. Now, what do you do with them, right? You're going to involve them in your life everywhere, okay? Especially like wherever they are, involve them. But here's a couple of little tidbits you can do with them. The very beginning, ask them to be your battle buddy, and then tell them, I'm going to ask you these questions, and I want you to ask me these questions. Like weekly, daily, monthly, all the time. You set up the schedule with them, but you're asked these questions, and have them ask you these questions. When was the last time you saw pornography? And whatever your addiction is, right? Alcohol, all those other things. When was the last time you consumed, thought of, or took those things, okay? What victories have you had today? I want you to talk about your victories, not just about your temptations and your failures. That's sad. I mean, yeah, you had them, but what victories? Did you say no? Did you sing and get rid of that feeling? Did you call a battle buddy and get rid of it? Did you read scriptures or did you read a good book? Did you go to your parents and seek help? Did you do all that? What did you do to have a victory? And tell them, and if they tell you their victory, praise, like, celebrate it. Like, oh, that's awesome. That's so cool. I'm so proud of you. Good job. Good job, man. Do it again. Do it again. I know you can. I knew you could do it. And then ask, this is such an important question. Where can I help? Awesome. I'm so glad you had a victory. Now, you had a temptation. What can I do next time? Do you want to call me next time? Is it a certain time in the day? Like at 9 o'clock at night when you're just hanging out and maybe your parents are at work or middle of the day, whatever it is. Do you want to call? Do you want to play a game together? Like, you know, find ways to help each other and freely give that information. If they ask you how they can help, hey, yeah, man, call me. I would love to talk. I would love to go cook s'mores in the backyard or whatever, even virtually, whatever, however you're going to do it. Involve your parents or your guardians in this. Have daily and weekly discussions with them about your life. Between you and your parents, you can create the second most powerful battle buddy system. Okay, there's your friends, which is very, very powerful. It's awesome. Right above that is your parents. It is such a powerful battle buddy system. Your parents grew up. Listen, youth, if they're about my age, if they look about like me, about my age, with some gray hairs and so forth, be patient. They grew up in a time when talking about addiction was not, allowed. It wasn't a popular subject. Like I said at the very beginning, my parents found out about my pornography addiction a year and a half ago. I'm 37 years old, right? I went almost 30 years without them knowing. Now they had their little tidbits, they find little things, but they didn't know. They had no idea. We weren't allowed to talk about it. We weren't allowed to discuss those things. It was something that, and so your parents grew up that way, not to talk about it, okay? Now your number one battle buddy system is your future spouse. That is gonna be the most powerful battle buddy you will ever have. Oh my gosh, it's awesome. It's amazing, it's incredible, because you share and you talk and you coordinate together and you overcome together. By speaking up about the temptations you face, you will shine a light on your difficulties. The more light that is shown, the more resources and help that will be available to you, okay? That is so important. You have to talk about it. Whatever you're struggling with, and I'm talking to you two parents, listen, we're being attacked just like everybody else. So you are not out of this discussion. You can't look down at your kids and say, no, you as well. I know you're being attacked just like everybody else, okay? This is the framework, okay? This is how you're going to overcome in the long term addiction. This is the framework you have to build in your life. Every day you're going to wake up and put on your armor. But first, you're going to put on your helmet, right? Your brain. Thoughts and desires by putting on your spiritual helmet, by filling your mind with good music, poems, memories, and ideas. Temptation tends to begin our mind is bored, stressed, and lonely. Okay, that's very, very important. Always be putting good things in your head, whether it's you're thinking about good things or you're consuming good things. Create, think of ideas, go out and tinker, build things. Especially right now, this is a perfect time for you to go out and build. Okay. Second, sword. Learning correct principles. This can be learned through good books, classes, schools, courses, and mentors. Success stands on good principles. Imagine while reading each day that you are literally in a sword fight with temptation. Your sword is, this is your offense, right? This is, you are putting things in, and you're taking good information in, and you're weaponizing it. You are making it work for you. You're taking lessons on how to overcome addiction. Like right here, this is awesome. This is a sword right now. You are gaining, you're sharpening your sword right now by listening to this. Getting individuals and building groups together. Guess what? That's sharpening your sword. That is learning good principles and standing on them and making sure you're not going anywhere else. That's your sword, okay? Shield. Oh my gosh, I love this shield. This is my favorite. With the shield, the Spartans would push, they would smash, they would cut, and they would destroy the enemy that stood before them with their shield. Your shield is meditation and prayer, or prayer, however you want to say that, which you can use to push temptation away, smash its plans, and cut down the lies, and destroy the wicked designs of your temptation. It's so important that you use your shield. Meditation and prayer, I'm telling you, I saw a great quote the other day. Meditation, and it was, I use them interwoven, right? So prayer or meditation, whichever one you want to use, it is so incredibly powerful. It will change your life for the better if you wake up every day and close out the day meditating, thinking, pondering. Plan out your day in meditation and prayer in the morning. Ask for help, seek guidance, and design your day. Before you even start, design your day in your brain. How are you going to, what are you going to do if a temptation does arrive? What are you going to do to overcome thoughts or something that pops up in your life? already plan it. Already plan how you're going to overcome it. And you'll be amazed of what happens when a temptation does pop up in your life. I'm so grateful for this time. I'm so grateful for this opportunity to talk to you. It's time for you to begin your hero quest. If you have any questions after this, or if you want any, if you want this slide deck, or if you need anything, just email me operationonwardmiracle@gmail.com, and you can gather. I'll give you anything, whatever you need. Do you want resources, information? You just let me know, and I'd be happy to help. So that's it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Justin. We do have a question that came in.
Okay.
One of the participants would like to know if you mind sharing your four songs.
Ooh, that is a really good question. I don't, this is so weird. I don't like to share my songs. I know that's so weird. I'll give you two of them, okay? Gifts at the Little Stream, and I'm a Child of God. The other two, I'm sorry, I know it's really weird, but that's right here in the heart. So. Any other questions?
That's okay. Does anybody have any other questions?
Wait, there's four, on my side, there's four chats. Is that on your side too?
Somebody else? Let me see. This is not liking me.
Oh, okay. So yes. So this there is both for parents and youth. Yes, have your son watch. It'd be awesome. So, and let me know. Let me know what he thinks. If you have any questions.
Okay. Well, it looks like that's all the questions that we have right now. Thank you so much, Justin. Everybody remember that this is available for you to rewatch or have your kids watch on Facebook and YouTube. And we'll be back with some more classes next week at 11 and 6 Eastern. Thanks so much.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this recording. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.